I don't know how many of the Marmokomas you had a chance to see, but there are three shmuzim here. I believe one and two are for sure related, and number three, I'm not sure. I may need your help to see if there's a connection. If I thought it was totally not related, I probably wouldn't say it. So I may need your help to see if it's related. The one and two, I think, are similar. The pasuk says at the end of Yisro, "Lo sala b'malos al mizbechi," and you should not. With a lot of different interpretations, basically, you should not make steps. It seems on the mizbeach. Ashelo sigole ervasra love, because it would expose erva. There's a famous Rashi here, because when you take the tznius of the steps that one takes on a ramp is greater than that on steps, and it would be almost a certain type of bizoyon on the Mizbeach to deface it with anything other than total tznius. Beautiful, beautiful concept in itself, worthy of its own shmuz. What caught my eye here is this Sforno. The Sforno says, Lo sala b'malos, afal pi shelo atrichecha, even though I, Ribono Shalom, do not bother you, lasos melachos, to do great workmanship, vifuyim, and amenities, adornments, l'shachni b'sochachem, so that I dwell amongst you. As HaKadosh Baruch Hu was saying, this is going to be my home, the Mizbeach. So it would make sense that I would be asking the Ribono Shel Olam, the Ribono Shel Olam's house, you should, it's a house of worship, you should do the proper interior design, proper, you know, molding and fancy trimmings, all the bells and whistles. You know, we know what those things look like. So even though I'm not asking you to do that, mikol makom, nevertheless, hishomer, you should be careful, milinog kalas rosh mizbeach. Don't conduct yourself with any kind of levity on the mizbeach, by the mizbeach. It's the makom Hashem. It's one of the holiest places. So it occurred to me, as I guess if you're preparing, if you see a mar makom like this, so just follow it through. The Chiddush screams at you. So that means that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have been matriach us to do malachas v'yifuyim, to do extra adornments, then he wouldn't have to give us this azhara of the Kalas Rosh. Notice the afalpi. It's a question. Notice you would think that you don't have to give proper bizayon, proper kavod, because I'm not requiring you to make this look so fancy. But now that I'm telling you it doesn't have to be fancy, you are likely to conduct yourself with Kalas Rosh. Kamash Malan, that even though you're not making it fancy, still you should conduct yourself properly without Kalas Rosh. Like I have to understand that. The person is building, by the Mishkan, is building, you know, the Mizbeach. What do we do on the Mizbeach? This is not a trampoline, the Mizbeach. We're not using for any kind of sports activity. This is not a ball house or one of these carnival, you know, rides. This is the Mizbeach. They're bringing karbonos on the Mizbeach. A carbon. You bring a carbon. The korban, you know, is a, it's a kapara for everything you did. It's in place of the person himself. He's bringing a katas. The person should die. He brings the animal there. Why would... So if it's fancy with extra adornments, then you're going to treat it with more kavod? This is the holiest, you know, arguably one of the holiest places that exists in the world. And this is what a person you have to worry about, that he's going to conduct oneself with kalas rosh? What's going on? So, lechora, I see from here a tremendous chiddush that we are very taken by chitzonius. It's just the way it is. When the chitzonius is vast, with every bell and whistle, we're a little bit more careful. That's not necessarily logical. Why? Just because something is a, you know, $50 million gold piece or edifice with trimmings and molding, would you act with more or less kalas rosh? What does that have to do with anything? This is a kapara for our sins. We're trying to machavos the balomo. We're trying to get a kapara so we should go into Olam Haba clean. What would fancy things have to do with it? It's not connect. Doesn't connect. It's not logical. But they're just the way we are, and we need to know that that's the way we are. That's how we're wired. That we are very taken in by the chitzonius. And let's face it. So Taka, why didn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu require us to, with all the adornments? And Hashem wants us to have the kavod for the Mizbeach, so he should make an obligation. You know, get your building campaign together and you should make it very extra chashuv. Why didn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu do that? And this I don't know the reason. I'm just supposing. Achor, the reason is because there are also negatives to do that. Because we're going to overwhelm ourselves with the chitzonius that could also produce other types of negative ramifications. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to be more pure. You know, all the psukim before him. You shouldn't have mizbeach, you know, different types of mizbeach, without kesef. You know, all these, there are other negative ramifications. But the negative ramification for keeping it more simple is that we're going to treat it with a certain amount of bizayon and kalas rosh. So we have to deher. So HaKadosh Baruch had a reason for not making it more chitzonius dika edifice. But at the same time, we're now vulnerable to this kalas rosh, without necessarily logic to it. You're using it as the mizbeach. We're not questioning what this is. And yet even someone, the greatest tzaddik, so to speak, who's bringing the karbon, who's coming in, the kohen, coming in with all the chashuva kavanos, is going to be vulnerable to kalas rosh. Because it doesn't have all the bells and whistles. So it's amazing. Deher, to first of all, we should be aware of that we are taken in by a lot of chitzonius. We walk by and we get very impressed if we see something fancy that's like more chashuv. It's not true. One has nothing to do with the other. You walk into a little, you know, shtibel in Geula that has not one bell or whistle. They probably don't even know what a bell or whistle is. Actually, nowadays in Gula, probably can't find a place like that without bells and whistles. But I assume there are still places in the world where there's no bells or whistles. Far still, the place that comes to mind. You know, there was almost nothing there. It was a kemat, like by the end, it was like a hole in the wall. But That is all for more kalas rosh. I believe we had our share. But still, we have to know that we have to overcome that tendency to be attracted to the Ruchnia Shabo and to treat it as if it was the fanciest of edifice. So this, my connection to this other Sephorno, which is in the beginning of, this is the last Pasuk in Yisro, but it just reminded me of this Sephorno, which I think is similar. This how we are so duped by Chitzonius. I think it's just so remarkable here in this Sephorno. The second Sephorno is like, I think it's a much bigger eye-opener for me. So the Pasuk says, Vayetze Moshe Likras Chosno. And Moshe went to greet Yisro. Vayishtachu, Vibaldam, Vayishaklo, Ikisim, Vayishalu, Ishlarei, Lisholam, Vayavo, Ola. So Moshe went to greet Yisro. Zok the Sephorno. You have to see this. Lo chodal, he did not desist. He did not hold back. Bishvil Mailoso, because of his great stature. Moshe Rabbeinu did not hold back because of his stature. Pnei Misha Shilem Imotova. To greet, to do Kabbalah's Panim, to Yisro, who did him great favors, Be'eis Sarlo. When Moshe Rabbeinu was in trouble, Yisro came to the rescue. And he was due, Yisro was due for Moshe to come greet him. Moshe owed him. So you should go greet Yisro. Also his father-in-law. But, you know, but okay, maybe there are tritzim for that part, but he did him a great tova. He owed him. And like the Torah is giving praise to Moshe Rabbeinu that he did not allow his great stature to hold himself back from greeting Yisro. We'll discuss like what the praise is in a moment. Ke'inyan, similarly, that's Maimer Mordechai Esther Osa. That whatever Mordechai said, Esther did. Ke'inyan Yosef, im Achiv b'malcho. And like Yosef with his brothers when he was ruling. V'ahepech, and the opposite, v'lo zochar saramashkim es Yosef. The saramashkim did not remember Yosef. So just analyze this. Here we have, he mentions three cases in Jewish history where there would have been a havamina for the person not to perform the requisite, the required etiquette, greeting, or derech eretz, because of their stature. They did not hold back due to their stature. What were the three cases? Moshe did not hold back from Yisro, wow, gavaldik. Mordechai, Esther did not hold back from listening to Mordechai, and Yosef conducted himself, you know, properly, doesn't say what, with the brothers, and did not allow his great stature to hold himself back. So we're talking about Moshe Rabbeinu, first Moshe Rabbeinu, like they almost like three shmuzim here. Moshe Rabbeinu was the un of Mikol Adam. He was the un of Mikol Adam. He was an un of already. And yet, there was some kind of nisayon, there was some kind of challenge, otherwise they wouldn't be giving him praise here. But there was some kind of challenge for Moshe Rabbeinu to perhaps not go to greet Yisro, who saved him when he was in trouble. He might not have gone due to his stature. Whoa. His stature. Okay, so I thought Moshe Rabbeinu, what was his stature? He wasn't king. People followed him. I wasn't sure. But listen to the Mordechai, by Mordechai and Esther. Esther's, due to her stature, she still listened to Mordechai. Esther still listened to Mordechai? Of course she listened to Mordechai. Mordechai was on the Sanhedrin. Okay, Esther was a Nevi'ah also, but Mordechai was the Gadol. And why wouldn't she have listened to Mordechai? Because of her stature? What was her stature? That was no great accomplishment. She was taken as the Malka because of a beauty pageant. Was it some great accolade that she had? Some great tzidkus on her part? What was the pshat? She might not have listened to Mordechai because she was, her stature was so great that she wouldn't listen to Mordechai? Well, it makes no sense. But you see, it goes to your head. Power goes to your head. I mean, Esther was able to be kovish. But you see, this is my connection, that we're taken in by certain chitzonius different things. It wasn't anything real. It's not like she had a reason to think that she had more Ruach HaKodesh. That's chora, not the pshat. But she was on a higher level than Mordechai. It was just based on her stature. She was the Malka. She was the queen, Achashverosh's wife. So therefore she shouldn't listen to Mordechai. Why? She listened to Mordechai all along before this. So why would she not listen? Because she's the Malka? What's the Shaykhis? Because you're Malka, you shouldn't listen to the Halacha. But we see that, again, this idea that it's not necessarily logical, but we are very taken in by a lot of chitzonius. So start believing that, you know, I'm royalty, I'm the queen, and she might have been, if not for her godless to overcome it, and that's why it's being pointed out here as a shvach, as a praise for Esther, she may have fallen in. And by Yosef and his brothers, I don't know specifically what it's referring to in Mitzrayim. But if anything, Yosef, because of his stature, may not have treated the brothers properly. But Yosef was trying to go out of his way to undo the sinner that existed. So I just want to conclude with this last shmooze. I'm just not sure if there's a connection. So, if there's a connection, maybe we may, just to not confuse anyone, why don't we just write this off as, okay, those are the two shmooze among chitzonius, and then a separate shmooze. I don't want to confuse anyone. If there's a connection, we'll do the connection like privately afterwards. But we're saying a separate shmooze. Once I started really with this third shmooze in my preparation. I was really working on this third shmooze, and it didn't occur to me what the shmooze was until already I was working on the other one. Then afterwards, I thought maybe there's a connection and maybe there is a shmooze. So I'm saying over this last shmooze. It's also quoting the pasuk Lo Sala Milas Al Mizbechi. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin says Darish Bar Kapara. Minaha milsa dam rabbanon. Where does it say this halacha? Where do we know this halacha that the rabbanon say in Pirkei Avos have a masunim adin, that one should be deliberate and thorough in din, in paskening din? Tiksiv, as it says, lo sala b'malos. That's this pasuk, Lo Sala B'malos Al Mizbechi. V'samech Lei, and next to that, V'Ela Mishpatim. Lo Sala B'malos, and then it says, Ela Mishpatim. I didn't know what that was talking about. What does that have to do with Mesunim B'din? Lo Sala B'malos, shouldn't make steps on Mizbech. I was totally lost. So Rashi says, Mesunim B'din, Regilin B'ham Sana. Mesunim B'din, you should be accustomed to patience, k'dei la'ayin b'yofe, that you should be ma'ayin, you should do a thorough research, kodem shetachtechuhu, before you levy the psak, before you give your verdict. And as it says, lo sala b'malos, b'chazaka, with emphasis or with confidence, b'mrutza, and very fast. So lo sala, that's the pshat, lo sala b'malos, there's some kind of hekesh or smichus to el mishpatim, lo sala b'malos, you shouldn't conduct your din Torah with, I guess, overconfidence and rushing. As it says, Ela Mishpatim, that's the connection. So we take a look at this Marsha. This is a Sanhedrin. Marsha says, a short Marsha, Lo Sala, I am Pirish Rashi. Take a look at Rashi. Okay, we just saw Rashi. Va'od Yesh Lomar, another pshat, Shelo Yale Ha'odam Al Machshavaso, it shouldn't enter a person's thinking, Ki Mailaso, that his greatness, Gedola La'amekadin, is greater than searching through a thorough research of the halacha. Miher or maher al mitzoy, to hurry up the exactness. Shouldn't do that. Shouldn't be thinking that he's greater than, he's so great he doesn't need to be ma'ayin. Aval, but rather yachshov, he should think, ki hu b'madrega shalamata mizeh, that he's a madrega lower, b'shelo yada lifsok, and he doesn't know how to paskin, ad acher misun, until after he's deliberate and thorough, v'ian tov, and a lot of ian. V'zesh omar, that's what it means, lo sala b'maylos. Lo sala b'maylos al mizbechi, it shouldn't enter your thinking, b'maylos, of your great maylos, that you're so great, that you don't need to do ian to paskin alocha. It almost sounds like drush, but lo sala b'maylos, you shouldn't be thinking that you have such gevaldika maylos that you don't have to ma'ayin. I don't know pshatli, sigola, ashalosi gola vasko lav, I don't know how to figure that second half according to this, but okay. It's just a, maybe not, I don't know, I don't have an answer for that. So, I would like to just ask the following kasha, pasha pshat in this, again, so there's third shmooze. Don't get lost. Don't lose me. The third shmooze. Bar Kapara says, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, have a mesunim adin. When you paskin halacha, you're a dayan. You go to a din Torah, and you're the dayan. And you should not mete out your verdict quickly. Where do we know that you should be mesunim adin? You should be thorough. As it says, lo sala b'malos. Rashi says, where do we know that from? Losal b'malos, you shouldn't rush, do it quickly with the chazak. I'm assuming it means like overconfident. Va'od yesh lomar, the second, that's Rashi. Va'od yesh lomar, that you shouldn't enter your mind that your greatness is enough that you don't have to do ian, but rather you should be musim. I was going crazy, but I was like, I was seeing double. What is the difference between Rashi and the Od Yesh Lomar? Rashi's pshat is lo sala b'maylos. You should not be rushed to din. You should not be overconfident. So that means that without this pasuk, a guy would come in and say, I'm ready to paskin. He doesn't need to do ian. So the Torah says, no, don't do that. Do Ian first, then paskin. The Od Yesh Lomar, another pshat, lo sala b'maylos, you shouldn't think yourself you have such great maylos that you don't need to do Ian, but rather you should do Masinas Bedin. I don't know. What is the difference between Rashi's pshat and the Od Yesh Lomar? I know it might sound like a hot question, But it can't just be that he has different interpretation. There are a lot of different Rishonim here on the Pasuk. Rashi with the steps and other Ramban, others. There are so many different Pshatim here on the Pasuk. So the Mashat was privy, his Achron was privy to other Rishonim other than Rashi. So he's just trying to give another Pshat in the Pasuk. What's going on? He's giving another Pshat in this Gemara. So I finally heard, I think, what the Pshat is and what the difference between the Rashi's Pshat and the Od Yesh Lomar, I think. Rashi's Pshat is a guy comes, according to Rashi's Pshat, a guy could come, a Dayan can come, and he knows he's great. He's, you know, the Vilna Gaon. But he knows that he shouldn't paskin halacha without doing Ian. So, like, Aleph Beis to him, but halacha says you should do Mesinas Bedin. But the person, this Gevalda the Tamach Chacham, still holds that he doesn't really need it, but the halacha is you have to do Mesinas Bedin. You have to do Ian. The second pshat sounds like it's more. You didn't do more than that. If you just did what that first scenario, no good. You get the wrong halacha. You wouldn't do it right, because you still hold that you don't need Ian. But the halacha says I've got to have a Linus Lila and spend 45 minutes on it. Okay, I'll spend 45 minutes on it. The second pshat holds that shelo yala odam machshavoso. You can't even be thinking in your mind that you don't need it. You have to be thinking that you're going to paskin the wrong halacha if you didn't do this Ian. It's not enough just to say, okay, I'll do a 45-minute Ian on this halacha, even though I learned it 100 times. But I'm obligated to do another Ian before I paskin halacha. That's the first shot. Rashi's shot. The second pshat holds, no, that's not enough. You have to know in your mind that if you paskin the halacha, even though you did it 100 times, 1,000 times, you're going to get the halacha wrong. You have to believe that you're not on that madrega. Because if you believed anything else, you're going to, even if you did the Ian, you did 5-hour Ian Seder, you did 5 days Ian Seder, you did a week, you spent a year on it. But if you spent the year on it, but you always held that you don't need to spend any time on it, you're just doing it because that's what you're obligated to do, Ken Zion, you could still end up with the wrong halacha. It makes a difference on what you hold. So we see how susceptible we are to succumb to just, these are mistakes in halacha based on a lack of godless on our kvishus hayetzer, our kvishus our midus, to have the proper understanding of the pitfalls, the tendencies to rush to din. What do I have to do it for? I remember, so I wanted to say over 2 mices. One is the someone when asked a shaila to the Chazon Ish, and the Chazon Ish was known to, you know, answer all the questions. The person came back a few days later. He says, "Does the Rav have an answer?" So the Chazon Ish said, "Nah, I don't have an answer. You told me it was a hypothetical question." So I said, but I'd just like to know what the answer would be. In a situation comes up, which it could, I'd just like to know what I would do. So the Chazon Ish said, "Do you think that the answers come flying out of my pockets? Every time a question comes to me, I have to toil for nights sometimes to come up with an answer." The Chazon Ish, Yet every time there was a question, he was saying, I can't answer a hypothetical question. Because I'm so busy with answering the real questions that are nogea. I can't invest myself properly for a hypothetical question. So he couldn't answer it. It sounded like the person writing this did not feel that it would have necessarily required such Ian, but the Chazon Ish felt that any kind of question, don't ask Stam questions. He has to think through. That was the story of the Chazon Ish. The other story I want to say, so I remember my first year in yeshiva, I was learning Mishneh Berurah. I just told it over to a couple of the guys. And I was learning something in Hilchos Shabbos, and I didn't understand what the Mishneh Berurah was saying. I remember I went over to, Rabbi Turk, Rabbi Tzvi Turk, Rashiv in Brooklyn, and he was learning in Kol in the front, and I asked him, you know, what's the pshat? It didn't make any sense. It doesn't seem to make sense. And he says, oh, what Mishneh Berurah means is like this and this, because he says later on, a page and a half later, something like this, so he means this over here. So, you know, I was young and, you know, probably a little arrogant. That is not the part I'm proud of. And I must have rolled my eyes a little bit and said, like, so how are you supposed to figure out and learn Mishneh Berurah? I said something to that effect, which was, you know, a little disparaging, like frustration. And how are you supposed to figure out a Mishneh Berurah? Like, almost like I didn't say this. I wasn't that brash. Like, why don't you write it clearly? So Rabbi Turk, I remember, said to me, you know Rabbi Turk, straight between the eyes, like, how many times do you learn this Mishneh Berurah? So I said, once, this is the first time. Learning this for the first time. So he said, get out of here. Just get out of here. I learned this Mishneh Berurah over 100 times. Just get out of here. And I was like, if you want to know the halacha, you can't just learn it one time and know the halacha. You gotta harp on it, to work on it. And you think you don't know it, but after many times, it comes. You do get clarity. The Ian is not anything mystical. Achara Ian, things become clear. It doesn't make sense why it becomes clear. You're just more comfortable with it. Maybe there's more siyata shmaya. I don't know. So Nachamol, the first shmuzim are dinin chitzonius, that since there were no instructions to make fancy adornments, we're susceptible to kalas rosh, not logical, it's irrational, as if it would be fancy, then we wouldn't necessarily maybe not even need this Azhara, but we are very taken in by the Chitzonius. We see the same Moshe, because of his stature, may not have gone to greet Yisro, who he was obligated to go meet, it would seem, Al Tzakaras Atov. Mordechai, Esther almost would not listen to Mordechai because of her stature. Yosef with the brothers. Also, it seems that a very good way to combat a lot of these koach hayetzer to help us get off our high horses is to work on the midah of hakaras hatov, that we're makir tov. That's what worked by Moshe Rabbeinu. He used the midah of hakaras hatov to overcome this seemingly difficult challenge. And Esther had to work on her Akaras HaTov to Mordechai, and Yosef to his brothers, and this Aramashkim was not a Baal Madrega, so he, Taka, was a Kafoy Tov, and did not do what he should have done to Yosef. And a separate shmooze, unless we find a connection, it seems that even for ourselves, to have the proper frame of mind when we are This is the connection between Yisro and Mishpatim. When we have to paskan halacha, we shouldn't get so caught up with our groista milis, our great attributes, which, according to Rashi, the pshat is just being masunim bedin, setting up the Ian Seder to do it, perhaps it would seem is enough. And according to the second pshat, if I'm right, which you're welcome to challenge, according to the second pshat, that even that wouldn't work unless we are in the right frame of mind, that we really believe that if I would paskin the halacha without proper mesinas bedin and iyun, I would get the wrong halacha. You have to really believe that you're not on that madrega. Otherwise, chas hashom, we could end up with the wrong psak.